Hello and welcome to Brain Injury Bites, where we provide help and advice for people after a brain injury. Hi, I'm Ashwani and I'm a trustee at Headway Warrington. I'm also a senior associate solicitor focusing on catastrophic injury, including brain injury.
My name's Brooke and I've lived with a traumatic brain injury since 2007.
We're delighted today to be joined by David Hilton. David is a, well, in fact, let me allow you to introduce yourself, David. Can you tell us about who you are and what you do?
Good morning, Ashi. I'm David Hilton. I'm a solicitor specialising in quarter protection work and a professional deputy at CFG.
And can you explain what a professional deputy is?
I can. A lot of people will know what an attorney is. Or a power of attorney. And a deputy is no different to an attorney in the sense of their role and responsibilities. But effectively, it's someone who is appointed to make decisions for those that are unable to make decisions for themselves as a result of a brain injury or illness, such as Alzheimer's or dementia. Mm-hmm. So they make decisions for people where they can't make them for themselves.
I guess those decisions can be in relation to things like health, welfare, but also financial matters.
Yeah, so capacity is time and decision specific, and it relates to all decisions that a person will be asked to make in their lives. Quarter protection is effectively split in half. So there is a health and welfare side to the court of protection and there is a property and affairs side to the court of protection. So the decisions that I make in my role as a deputy are specific to property and financial affairs.
I think it might just help actually for our listeners to understand what the court of protection is, because not everyone will know what that is. And of course, it's a mechanism that's specific to jurisdiction we're in, so in England and Wales.
So the court of protection was established by the Mental Capacity Act back in 2010. And it exists, it is a court, sits in London. It does sit in regional locations, but primarily it's dealt with on the papers. And it deals with either making decisions for people who aren't able to make those decisions for themselves, or alternatively, it has the authority to appoint someone like myself or a family member as a deputy to make ongoing decisions for the person going forwards.
I'd like to say I'm under the court of protection as well, not with David, but with someone else. And it's been a really reassuring thing to have, because if you get a sum of money, you think that you'd be okay with it. You think you'd be able to handle your financial affairs, but I suppose that echoes in all my life. I think I can do things, but I absolutely can't do them.
Is it like a bit of a helping hand for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that I can do things, but I can't actually do them myself. For instance, the court protection, they bought my house for me, and these days it tends to be parking tickets. And but I think they would come through my door and I would put them on the pile and I'd never deal with them. And it's just, you know, I'd say I'll do that tomorrow, and then you've just been too long and then you get more of a fine. And it's just really nice somebody to have there who's taking care of my affairs for me.
Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting point, because I'm guessing the, you know, things like dealing with the parking fines and making those decisions, and especially when you're struggling with the effects of your brain injury.
Just little things that you think you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You think on the face of it, and then you talk to people and think, oh, you'll be fine doing that, won't you? And you say, yeah, I'd be absolutely fine doing it, but lo and behold, I won't pay them and I'll forget to pay them. And
yeah.
I suppose the concentration comes into it, the memory comes into it.
Planning and execution.
Exactly, yeah. And all these things that you think that you haven't got and you like to think that you deny. You spend, particularly me, having a brain injury, I spend all my time pretending I haven't got a brain injury, and then, you know, things like this come up and then you realise that you absolutely have. So it's lovely, you know, it's really nice to have somebody to take care of that side of things for me.
It's interesting you say that, Brooke, because you're very insightful in terms of the effects of your brain injury and how it affects you day to day. What I will say is all clients are different. The effects of a brain injury are different. And a lot of my clients aren't as insightful as you are. They don't realize their abilities or their inabilities. And being honest, there is a lot of resentment for someone like me in that role because, as you quite rightly say, you think you can do it, you want to do it, but ultimately you don't. But you understand that you don't and you won't, and you appreciate the help and support that, that someone yeah. like me can give you. Whereas those that lack that insight mm-hmm. find it quite a challenge to have someone like me involved making decisions or dealing with things that have to be dealt with over and above the day-to-day. And as I say, every client's different.
It can be quite difficult for people to sometimes accept that they need the help, or just, you know, that feeling of control being taken away. And we'll come on to talk about that, because there will be people who'll be reluctant, who'll have barriers put up in terms of accepting that help.
Pride comes into it massively as
absolutely.
Well, because you think, I can do this, I can pay bills, it's absolutely fine. I've just when you say I've got insight, I've come to appreciate that I fail at these things. So it's just
I'd like to not use the word fail. Finding challenging.
I appreciate assistance in this area.
But I just want to come back, David, to what you were saying before about capacity, and that capacity can be time specific, it can be decision specific. Again, I think it'd be helpful for our listeners to understand what capacity is and how someone's found to have capacity or not, and how capacity can be affected by a brain injury.
So there is a legal test for capacity, and it's effectively a four-stage test. It's time and decision specific, as we've already said. And to be able to make a decision, and this goes to every decision that someone might be asked, what clothes am I going to wear today? Can I afford to spend £100 on something? And it comes down to whether the person is able to understand the information that is relevant to the decision being made, whether they are able to retain that information for long enough in order to make a decision, whether they are able to weigh up the pros and cons of making the decision. Should I pay £100 or should I pay £50? And then ultimately, whether they're able to communicate their decision. So someone who has a complete inability to communicate will fail the capacity test because there is no way of them communicating their decision. Having said that, there is a code of practice that works alongside the Mental Capacity Act, which effectively says that deputies and attorneys have to empower every individual to make their own decisions. So it's not that me in my role as a deputy or anybody else in their role as a deputy or attorney is making every single decision for that person for their entire lives. It's about the decisions in question at the time that those decisions need to be made. So if Brooke can decide to go out and drive his car and go off to the shops and do his shopping, that's absolutely fine. It's not a decision that I would want to get involved in. And Brooke has the fundamental right to go off and do what he wants to do, as long as, in the eyes of the law, he has capacity to make that decision.
That's a sort of level of budget I'm comfortable with handling, shopping budget, because, it doesn't seem to work on me with anything more than that. Early days, I had an occupational therapist and I just had like a certain amount of money. Like, I think it was like £40. And it was on basically the disability benefit that I got. And it was £40 and £40, these two different payments. And I would plan and I would use that. And you think, when I get away from this, I'd be able to just manage this money easily. And I'd be able to just use my card. And it just, lo and behold, what happened is I start to use my card and it just... You just tap it and then one day it says you've got no money left. And well, and that day comes quite soon, actually. So I just think it's something I've had a real trouble with is budgeting my money. Well, you see in textbooks and stuff, it's something that's quite popular after brain injury, people having trouble with budgets. And I've just, like you said, I've got insight. And well, I've just got insight into the fact that I just don't know how to do it.
But sometimes that's the first step, understanding that you need that help in the first place.
Absolutely, yeah. So do a lot of people go on to, you know, manage their own affairs after a while?
Yeah, I mean, just to say that there's a lot of people that don't have a brain injury or don't have an illness affecting their decision-making that can't budget, Brooke.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are in debt to credit card companies,
I guess so, yeah,
or that are declared bankrupt. So it's not specific to a brain injury, but there's a medical reason why you struggle with your budgeting, and that's different. And the role of a deputy is to help you and empower you and rehabilitate you to manage your own affairs. So I've had clients over the years where they've really struggled with budgeting early on, and so much so that they've had to have or be given sort of daily amounts of money, because if they were given anything more than money on a daily basis, it would be gone and they wouldn't have enough for the following day or right, the following day. But over time and with support, they've moved away from having daily monies through to having weekly monies, and they'd be able to budget that money over a 7-day period. And then it moves to fortnightly, and it then might move to monthly. And suddenly we're in a situation where the client feels like they're getting paid a wage every
yeah,
month,
right,
and they've got responsibility for managing that wage on a monthly basis. And again, it's taking those steps as part of that rehabilitation process to then introduce the odd bill that they might be responsible for in their own right. And before you know it, and it doesn't apply to everybody, some people sadly will never regain capacity.
Right.
But a deputy has an ongoing duty to assess their client's capacity. And if they get to a point where they can demonstrate the ability to manage their own financial affairs, then the deputy is under a duty to have themselves discharged and have that person taken away from the court of protection, and they're back to very no much life, where yeah, they were before their accident or before their illness.
So I guess in an ironic way, your ultimate ideal endpoint is to kind of do yourself out of a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it a number of times over the years. What I find, and I suspect if I asked Brooke this, he'd probably say the same thing. They don't want, at that point in time, they don't want to get rid of someone, because we are, I don't want to say the angel on the shoulder, but we're the person looking out for them
yeah,
for those bigger things that they might trip up on.
Yeah.
And if I were to say to Brooke, you've done really, really well over the last few years, actually, I don't think you need me anymore. Brooke might say, well, no, actually, I quite like having you looking over my investments.
Yeah,
or I like not having to worry about paying parking fines or speeding tickets. Yeah. I just send them to you and you yeah, pay them.
Or I might want to buy a house in a few years and I'm going to need your help with that.
Yeah, and we become a comfort blanket to those people. But ultimately, in the professional sphere, we are paid for what we do, and we are paid out of the person's money to make those decisions for them. So fundamentally, it's not right for us to take payment for decisions that we are not necessarily making. Those clients are capable of making those decisions. Of course, if they want to pay us with capacity because they see us as a help, like Brooke very much sees his deputy as a help. And if Brooke were to be reassessed, he might say, yeah, I'll pay you to just keep an eye on things in the background, but I'll deal with everything day to day. And in those circumstances, I've continued acting as a trustee or someone that comes in and offers advice on an ad hoc basis to those clients.
My situation is that I've got a deputy, but I've also got my dad as a litigation friend, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Been told they don't have total power, but generally if I want something, it's, you know, I have to agree with my dad. And I put that in place because I just don't trust myself, basically. And I find that if I can deal with stuff, but if I'm only thinking about that, I don't know if this will make sense, but if I can deal with things, but if I'm only thinking about that one thing, like I can, you know, if I'm only thinking about the bill, I can pay the bill. But then if something else comes into my head, like, I don't know, a relationship problem or anything, and it all gets forgotten about, I suppose. That's the what's it called when you can't do two things at once? Multitasking. Yeah. And I just find that anything I do, I have to be concentrating solely on that thing. And I just think for that reason, direct debits are an absolute godsend as well. So like if I've got all my bills there, run by direct debit, so they go on in the background. But if you throw anything like a parking fine into the mix, I know we keep going on parking fines. I'm not that bad a parker, honestly, but I'm just using that as an example.
See Brooke's car parked there and everywhere all over Manchester.
Yeah, with a clamp on it usually. No, I'm not joking. Yeah, if you throw something like a parking fine or something like a curveball into the mix, then it, yeah, I usually can't deal with that.
And I think going back again, Brooke, I mean, you have that insight and you very much see your deputy as someone who helps you. And that is the role that I try and fulfill on a daily basis. I'm there to help people to make decisions that they aren't able to make. And ultimately, if they aren't able to make those decisions, and I've taken all the steps to try and empower them to make those decisions, then the buck stops with me and I'm able, in the eyes of the law, to make that decision on their behalf. But it comes back to that help, and it is about helping. And Ashley, you touched on it before. A lot of clients do see it as control, and it really isn't control. Yes, we've got a duty to make sure that the money is managed appropriately and that we're making the right decisions on behalf of the clients that we act for. But it's about helping.
Yeah,
I'm paying your car tax so you don't get into trouble with the police and have your car clamped. And I'm going through all the legal paperwork for buying your house because there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of information that you might not be able to process and understand.
Yeah, yeah. And as you said, because there's a medical reason why you'd struggle to do those things. So, and we see that a lot in brain injury, that memory processing, recall are all issues that people can struggle with. So being able to understand that information and, you know, understand how that works in the wider context of things and just that information overload. And then, you know, as you said, Brooke, you know, just throw in a little curveball here and there that's unexpected, and suddenly things that you think you might have a handle on suddenly go out the window.
I'm really good at just pretending that I'm fine. I can present now. Like, I suppose in the very early days, I used to speak with a stutter, and I used to speak really quietly and in a monotone way. But I'd like to think I can speak to people now, and you wouldn't know that I've got a brain injury. But and then people would say to me things like, "Oh, I can log onto the website. I can go and check my car. I can do it. I can demonstrate that I can do all the things." But then I think the problem with me is I'll just forget. And forget to do it, and then I won't do it. So I'm good at pretending I can do it, but I'm not good at actually doing it. So it's a really nice comfort blanket to know that somebody's watching over me for me.
Yeah.
But you're a really good example, Brooke, of sort of capacity not being black and white. I talk to people outside of my role, and I talk about the clients that I deal with and I interact with, like I do with you on a daily basis. Mm. And they look at me and they think, oh, what? They're not lying in a hospital bed and unconscious. And people have this idea of someone with a brain injury is completely unable to make any decisions, communicate. They're surprised that my clients are emailing me or ringing me or I'm going out and talking to them about their investment portfolios. And they stop me in the tracks and say, hang on, are they not what? They can talk to you. And capacity isn't black and white. There are 50 shades of grey when it comes to capacity. There are those where, sadly, I will be making every decision from a financial perspective that they need to make throughout their lives. And they are unlikely to ever regain capacity. But then there are others that are at the other end of the spectrum who are like you, Brooke. You would not know, sitting here in front of you today, that you have a brain injury.
I could convince somebody that I haven't and I'd be able to handle my own affairs. But and there's also like embarrassment as well, because, you know, you speak to your friends and, you know, you speak to, you know, people my own age, and they're obviously dealing with mortgages and stuff like that. And you just kind of, and they assume that you have as well. So you just kind of, you know, you fake it and you just say that you have and stuff. And
I think you're probably a good example of somebody who demonstrates capacity on time and decision specific ways. So yeah, like you said, you know, you can totally handle sort of your shopping budget and going out and buying this, that and the other on a day-to-day basis, but bringing a bigger financial decision, one that needs a lot more careful consideration,
absolutely,
weighing up and things being done by a certain time, if you're adding in the pressure of deadlines, etc., it becomes harder for you, and you risk then not being able to make those decisions because it's too much information.
Yeah. I can only handle, like, to think about one thing at one particular time, another thing comes along and knocks that thing out of my brain, and then it's like a
Skittles.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, David, I think it'd be really helpful for our listeners to have, you know, again, just to dispel some preconceptions, some myths. Are there any sort of examples that you can give us of how you've empowered clients to make decisions, dispelling that myth of it being you controlling everything?
So there are five principles to the Mental Capacity Act, and we've already touched on a couple of them. But the most important is best interests. Now, all of my clients live their own lives. And as a deputy, it's not for me to live my life through them. So when it comes to decision making, it's about what decisions they have to make or they want to make in terms of their future. It's not for me to decide that they should live in a 3-bedroom house instead of a 5-bedroom house. If they can afford to buy a 5-bedroom house, then that's a decision that I should support in their best interests. Similarly, I have passions in my own life that won't apply to any of my clients, but they have passions that similarly won't apply to me. And it's not for me to impose my belief system on what they want to do with their lives. So if they like dogs or cats or bikes or motorbikes, that's ultimately their lives and their decisions to make. And with support, I'm able to support those decisions in their best interests. And interesting, when Brooke was talking about his dad's involvement, a lot of people think that deputies make the decisions in isolation and they control my money, they control the decisions that I'm allowed to make. And that's not the case. As a deputy, we have to consult not only the client about what it is that they want to do and how they are going to get to where they want to be, but we have to consult with those around them. We have to talk to family members. We have to talk to other professionals or healthcare professionals that might be involved so that we have a real understanding of what is it that that client is doing, what is it that that client is wanting to do, and ultimately, what decisions am I going to be asked to make that they aren't able to make for themselves, but that will ultimately be in their best interests?
I got my dad as a litigation friend put in place as like an extra. I'm just scared of like spending all the money and making really stupid decisions. So if as much as I don't want to sack my dad sometimes, I do appreciate that it's just an extra like barrier that I need to go through to make a sensible decision.
What I always find really interesting, certainly working with some of my clients, is that you're entitled to make unwise decisions. How does that square with, like, you know, the work that you do with your clients and knowing that your sort of ultimate aim is their best interest, but they are individuals, they are entitled to make their own decisions, you need to empower them?
Yeah, I mean, unwise decision making is not specific to someone with a brain injury or an illness. We all make unwise decisions in our daily lives. There are still people that smoke, and all the evidence says that that's an unwise decision, but people carry on doing it with full capacity. So we've got to try and strike a balance between what is genuinely an unwise decision and what is a decision that's been made applying the legal test and absent capacity. So an unwise decision is
buying a Lamborghini.
Yeah, so it's a balance between striking a balance between unwise decisions that are genuine with capacity and those that are not necessarily unwise decisions. They are decisions that are made without capacity, okay? But it's about risk management.
Yeah.
And when we are responsible for large amounts of money, an unwise decision becomes relative to the amount of money that we're in control of and we're handling day to day. So it might be an unwise decision to spend £300 on something that you could go and get for £100. But ultimately, if that's proportionate to the amount of money that we're managing and there is a cost to having someone like me involved, I might allow unwise decisions without capacity to be made on the basis that ultimately it's not going to have such a detrimental effect in the longer term.
Would you then talk to your client about it afterwards and say, look, talk me through why you wanted to make that particular decision? Or, you know, I think where I'm going with that is that you're right, we do all make unwise decisions, and there's a big thing about learning from your mistakes as well, and, you know, applying that learning to future decisions. So would you have those conversations reflecting with your clients about the decisions that they made and why would they make that decision again armed with the information that they have now?
Of course. I mean, talking to clients and their families is key to understanding what's in their best interests. But an unwise decision in isolation is one thing, and then repeated unwise decision making potentially turns into an inability to make the decision that they were being asked to make in the first place. So an example, a client might ring and say that they've got holes in their trainers. They've seen a new pair of trainers online and they need the money sending across to them because they don't have enough in their account to do that there and then. And we send the money across to them and they ring the following day and they tell us that they've got holes in their trainers and they want £100 to buy these trainers. And we ask them, well, what did you do with the £100 that we sent you yesterday? And they said they got distracted and they spent it on something else and they can't remember. And what looked like or looked and felt like a decision, a capacitous decision on day one, I've got a hole in my shoes, I need money to go and buy a new pair of shoes, reasonable. Perfectly legitimate, suddenly turns into an incapable decision because they've not applied any recall, or they've had an inability to apply recall to what it was they were asking for the money for in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it goes to balance. So £100 on day one, £100 on day two, day three comes and they're ringing again. Actually, we might order the trainers for them online. Because yes, they do still need a pair of trainers, but every time we send them money, they spend it on something else.
That links into what I was saying. That's basically what I was saying about me being able to pretend that I've got capacity, but when I actually don't, I'm able to fake that I haven't got a brain injury in a particular situation like that. I have this money to get the trainers, I will buy the trainers, but I might not.
But I guess it's somebody like David who's sort of standing back and looking at it in the bigger picture. So from day one, you're able to portray that you've got that ability to make that decision. But over time, you, David, would be able to see that something's not quite right here.
I mean, Brooke, you say fake it. I've had lists of birthdays and death anniversaries on a number of clients over the years because I'd get a call one week to say, it's the anniversary of my grandma's death. Can I have £40 to buy some flowers and put them on her funeral? And 6 months later, I'd get another call saying, it's my grandma's anniversary of her death. Can I have £40 to put flowers on
her? You've got two grandmas, but
the third one comes up on a 9 month. But these are the things, you say fake it. And I don't want to go so far as to say that clients ring up and lie, but ultimately they want their money. A lot of clients just want to have the control of their money. Go back to what we were saying before. You have insight into what you can and can't do and where you need that support. But that doesn't apply to all clients. So ultimately, they want their money. They want to be able to spend it. And again, it's about risk management and how much time, or picking my battles, how much time do I spend and charge the client for arguing over decisions or release of money that ultimately is not going to make a difference because it will cost them more for me to challenge them than it will. But I've had lists of, like I say, lists of birthdays, lists of anniversaries. I had a client who used to have a clothing allowance and he must have had 100 white t-shirts, 50 pairs of blue jeans because the list never changed. Every time we got the list for the request for his clothing allowance, it was the same list of clothes.
Copy and paste.
Ultimately, I know that he wasn't going out spending that money on clothes. But for me to challenge him, it would have cost him more than it was being sent to him. And
your role is to not be paternalistic. It is to empower. And as you say, people are allowed to make unwise decisions, but feel empowered in doing so, I guess. What about the situation where, you know, you've got clients where they're vulnerable because of other pressures, family members, friends, people trying to extract money from them and them feeling powerless in a way to say no?
I mean, I was going to touch on it when we were talking before, and Brooke talking about pride and sort of he'll blag it. In terms of and convince people, but similarly they will try and blag it with you, Brooke, and I'm sure you've had instances over the years where people have said, oh, you've got some money, can you give me that? And one of the stock phrases that I often use is blame Canada. Yeah, the South Park reference.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, ultimately, some clients quite like the idea of saying to their family members or their friends, "Oh, well, I need to speak to my solicitor, and they're not going to let me. They're not going to let me have it."
Or yeah, you're like the gatekeeper.
And I'm the gatekeeper, and they like that.
Yeah,
and for a lot of the time, for parents who might have concerns about their as they get older and their child gets older, their vulnerabilities when they're no longer around. And again, it's that idea of having someone that person can blame. Because and it takes the pressure away from them from having to say, well, no, it's not something that I'm in control of. I can't just give you £5,000 to pay off your credit card. I've got to speak to my deputy, and they're going to ask me what that money's for. They're going to ask me why, and ultimately they're going to say no. And it takes that pressure away.
Yeah.
And again, it's working with different clients. Some clients like the fact that they can blame Canada. Other clients don't like the fact that they have to come to me in the first place. And it's always a balance.
A situation that somebody could get themselves in, which fortunately I haven't really been in myself, is that especially like early days of brain injury, you find yourself like, I've had like loneliness, really, really bad loneliness. And what you can do is, or what somebody can do is if they've got money, then they could like, you know, offer friends to come out with them. You know, if they buy them lunch just to get the company. If then it happens again, you know, then people start to expect it. And then you find themselves getting these friends, but they're actually not friends. They're just people who...
Or people
want
who
for
use
the money.
Like emotional blackmail.
Yeah.
We all know the saying, money is the root of all evil.
Yeah, absolutely.
As soon as someone has money, then people start to come out of the woodwork.
I haven't.
But that's not, I just want to make it clear for the listeners, that's not to say that a deputy is only required for those that have a lot of money. And more often than not, a deputy isn't someone like me in a professional context.
Uh-huh.
It is a family member. Yeah. So as we said before, capacity can be illness, it can be age related, it can be injury related. It doesn't have to be through a compensation claim or a personal injury or a clinical negligence. It can be someone who develops Alzheimer's in later life. And in those circumstances, if they have a few thousand in savings, they've got a house, they're moving into a care home setting, it's unlikely to be someone like me that is managing their financial affairs. It's likely to be one of their children or one of their siblings, depending on how old they are, or a grandchild that might take on that role.
Thank you for listening to part one. We hope you can join us for part two. Please don't forget to follow, subscribe, and share our content. If you do have any suggestions for topics that you'd like us to cover, why not drop us a line at hi@braininjurybites.co.uk.